I'm Ryan Penny, and welcome to The Catholic Sphere. The result of the 2024 presidential election has been described by many as a red wave that includes many more young men and women than was the case in 2020. And even aside from the results of the presidential election, a growing number of people are claiming, and even some empirical evidence suggests, that Gen Z and the youngest millennials are turning toward more traditional values on faith and family. But is this really the case? In other words, are we turning a cultural corner in this country? Are we becoming a God and family first nation? And is Gen Z leading the way? To talk about all this, we have with us the founder and president of Live Action, Lila Rose. She's joining us today from California. And next is entrepreneur Zach Costello, and he is with us today from Virginia. And last, but certainly not least, we have the co-founder and CEO of Emergent Order, as well as host of the popular YouTube channel Dad Saves America, John Popola. He's joining us today from Texas. Combined, these panelists have over 800,000 subscribers on YouTube alone. And the first question is for all of you, but I'll start with you, Lila. Are we turning a cultural corner?
Well, I love the positive angle of that question, and I think that we are. And there's data to show that Gen Z, especially Gen Z men, are more conservative. They're going to church more. They're voting for more conservative values at the voting booth. But you look at the larger trend of both Gen Z women and Gen Z men, and what I think you're seeing, and this happens with every generation, right? They look at the generation in front of them, and they look at what was maybe not so good about that generation and then what was good. And I think millennials, you know, a lot of millennials are marrying later, or they're single, they never get married, they never have children, or they try to have children later in life, and then they're not able to have children. Gen Z sees all of this, and I think Gen Z, there's an actual trend now of Gen Z wanting to get married at younger ages. So more Gen Zers are getting married in their early 20s than millennials got married in their early 20s. So you see some of these trends happening. And I think that does show a cultural shift happening where people, younger people, are valuing marriage, family, and children more than, let's say, millennials. And that's because I think they see some maybe miserable millennials, or millennials that kind of waited till everything was in line, their house and their career and everything else, before they started a family. And they see then some of those millennials had a failure to launch, never had that house, that family, those kids. And so I do think there's a hunger in Gen Z for connection, for family, for relationships, for marriage. And I think we're seeing them make some different choices. And I'm very hopeful about all that, because as you guys know, the family is the building block of any civilization, and it's the natural church. It's where people first can experience God's love. And so I'm very hopeful about some of the trends that we're seeing with Gen Z.
That's a powerful point, Lila. This idea that, you know, sometimes experience is the best teacher. And sometimes, I guess that means looking at your older siblings or the generation in general that came before us, and seeing what's not working. So to build on this, John, I want to know your thoughts on this. Do you think that things are changing for the better, especially among young people?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, the answer is definitely yes. Everything you said and Lila just said, I think, is true. Mm-hmm. I also think that one thing that's kind of interesting, especially as a Catholic, is the particular focus on joining the Catholic Church and Orthodoxy among young men, I think, is powerful. And I think it's, in a lot of ways, an antidote to the worst excesses of the manosphere. You know, I have a 19-year-old son, and so I've got a front row seat to this. And I think that, frankly, our boys have had enough of being barked at and yelled at and scolded, starting in junior high. And the church offers a positive place to put that energy. And especially the Catholic Church, I think, offers one that's rigorous and physical and embodied. And it's exciting. It's a countercultural move to go to Mass in 2025. And I think that that's really exciting for young people.
Yeah, in a sense, it's like going to church now is the new rebellious thing to do, amazingly enough.
It's punk.
Yeah.
The Eucharist is punk.
And Zach, I know you have some things to say about this.
Well, I mean, I think there are certainly signs that we're certainly turning a cultural corner. And I'd say two of those main signs are, you know, not just Donald Trump winning the 2024 presidential election, but the total election of a conservative government in the United States. The next, I would say, would be the shift in religion that we're seeing amongst young people as you know, we just, as Lila talked about, especially. But I mean, this is the result, I think, of just a sick and tiredness of this leftist, secular, progressive ideology that has proven just to come up empty in its promises of meaning, stability, and fulfillment in our lives. I mean, it's being found out, exposed, and many of us are recognizing it and getting back to these fundamental stories and beliefs that give us meaning, that gave us meaning, stability, and fulfillment in the first place.
Yeah, it seems like this whole project of postmodernism has been weighed and measured and found wanting in the end. There's some fed upness going on here. And perhaps this shift is, as you and John were just talking about, more obvious with men, with young men in particular, but it's also happening with women too. And Lila, I want your take on this. Many were shocked, Lila, by the fact that many more women voted for Donald Trump in 2024 than they did in 2020. In fact, to the extent with young men and women combined, there was a 54% Democratic margin decrease. So my question to you is, does that indicate that more women are waking up to the horror of abortion, for instance? Or does the red voting spike among women signal something else?
So those are all really good questions. I think it's a bit of a complex picture because Kamala Harris was a uniquely bad candidate. So talking really political here for a minute, you know, President Trump was faced with a really bad candidate. She had high levels of unlikability. She made abortion her whole campaign. And as much as, yes, there are many pro-choice women, women who support abortion in this country, there's obviously a lot of pro-life women too. And I also think even women who would think that they support abortion, they're not going to make abortion necessarily their whole personality. Even those women who maybe are not as educated on it, they're not as formed, maybe they think, well, I need to have some abortion. They haven't seen the full truth of what abortion actually is, the killing of a baby. Even those women, though, those quote-unquote pro-choice women, that's not necessarily the number one thing they think about when they walk into the voting booth. So I do think the left and the Democrats made a huge miscalculation in the last election, both with their candidate, Kamala Harris, being very unlikable, kind of, you know, taking over on top of Joe Biden, and then number two, her making her whole campaign, kind of her whole personality, be in support of abortion. I think there was a backlash to that. When it comes to Gen Z women today, I do think we're kind of at a turning point where there's a decision being made in the hearts of women every day about what do I want for my future? And I think a lot of women, again, they look at the path of basically modern feminists who say that you don't need a man, you know, babies are a burden, promiscuous sex is empowering. I mean, all of these lies of modern feminism. And I think when you actually live out the fruit of those lies, it's misery. And they're seeing that misery in some of their, you know, elders, in some older millennials who are lonely and unhappy, or Gen Xers who never really fully launched or whatever it is. And they're thinking, maybe this is not good. Maybe, you know, rejecting marriage, rejecting children, rejecting men is not a good path. And so that's where I have a lot of hope. Now, I gotta say, as you know, everyone on this, you know, in the sphere today knows, there's a ton of propaganda online right now and in our culture that's just pushed on women, pushed on men, telling them lies about their identity as women or as men, telling them lies about marriage, lies about sex, lies about life. So all the more opportunity for us to be out there, you know, lovingly sharing the truth and also sharing a bit of our own lives. You know, I got married, I've got three kids. Being married, my marriage, my kids, as a woman, these are the greatest gifts of my life besides my faith. And just being willing to speak about the gift that faith is, marriage is, children are, and welcoming other people into our family homes to say, hey, like this is what life's all about. I think that also sets a tone and gives people a vision for what's possible. Because remember, like the relentless propaganda of the modernists, of the modern feminist, of all of the craziness is these lies. And so you got to give them a positive vision of what's possible. A lot of them are from divorced households. A lot of them, you know, maybe didn't even have siblings growing up. So there's a lot of brokenness in younger generations, in Gen Z. And so showing them what's possible and how beautiful and good marriage is, children are, I think is half the battle. And again, I'm happy that you're doing this on the Catholic Sphere today and that there's a lot of people out there openly praising the gift that marriage is, having children is, because I do think that that makes a difference in all of the pivotal decisions that Gen Z and younger generations are making.
Yeah, it seems like sometimes that joyful witness that you're talking about, not just in our words, but how people can see how joyful we are with our marriages and our children, that's the most powerful response, it does seem, in response to the void that has been made by these empty promises that have been pumped into our culture for so long. So thank you for speaking on what you think's been happening with the young women today, John. So I want to ask you now, this 15% spike for Trump among young men in the last election, and these reports that more young men are turning toward Christ, can you explain more? Like, let's go deeper. What's really going on with young men these days?
Well, I think one of the things that is really important to remember for, you know, if you're in your late teens, but especially your early 20s, is you came into the beginning of your identity formation, right? Your middle school. My son would call middle school the Hunger Games. And I think those of us that remember this, remember that middle school really is terrible. But middle school as a young, you know, ascendant male, when you're being told the future is female and that masculinity is toxic, and that and you're being dragged to Me Too rallies, and basically everywhere you turn, all of the things you love are basically being recast to exclude you. You know, that is that you can only push that so far. And I actually know something about this. I used to be a creative director at Spike TV, which was the first network for men. Now it no longer exists. I think it would technically have been considered a hate crime in 2024 to have worked at Spike TV. But, you know, I think that we have a counter revolution going on. I think we have basically like the next generation of Alex P. Keaton, for those viewers who remember this, in young Gen Z men. One story in particular. So, you know, my son's, it's his first year in college. And for the past 6 years, I've been worried, am I going to send my son off to college and have him get brainwashed into basically like satanic communism if he goes to school? And we were together for Christmas, and he said, "Pop, you were so worried about that. I feel more like you every day that passes that I'm in college." And all of my roommates are the exact same way. So I think we have maybe not given our kids enough credit for having minds of their own and being able to interpret nonsense that's been put forward in front of them. You know, the benefit of, I think, being a person of faith, believing in family, believing in marriage, is that this is the truth. These ideas are correct. And so I think maybe we can all take a little bit of a sigh of relief to some extent, that the truth will win out. Because in the darkest moments of this past decade, it has felt like maybe the truth won't win out. But I think that's what's happening with our boys. And I mean, boys and girls, but boys seem to have gotten pushed to the reactionary limit sooner. And I think that's what's happened. I think that's why boys have bounced back fastest and first.
Yeah, kind of like being pushed back into a wall, pushed to the edge here. And so people shouldn't be surprised almost at what has been happening. So Zach, speaking for the men as well, is there anything that you wanted to add to what John just shared?
Well, I mean, I agree with Lila in that Kamala Harris was a uniquely bad candidate. So I think that helped drive men to President Trump. I mean, however, I will say that President Trump appealed to and won over men in a way that I would say very few politicians have really ever been able to do. And what happened is Trump essentially became, I mean, whether you like it or not, like a masculine hero for men. And that developed for a couple important reasons. I mean, first, I mean, he was attacked like no other politician has been attacked in our lifetime. And I think he said that he's the most persecuted political figure. I mean, it's definitely a Trumpism. in American history. But I mean, when you've taken a bullet and it ripped off half your ear, I mean, you might have some right to say that. I mean, assassination attempts certainly put you up there, but you also have the lawfare being waged against him, the raiding of Mar-a-Lago, the felony convictions, the multiple impeachments, the Russian collusion hoax, and like the list goes on. But we know now because of Doge, and I think this is important to say, that the deep state is a real thing. And this deep state has done everything in its power to prevent, suppress, and take this man out. Yet, he's still here. And he's won over men, I really believe this, because of his perseverance and literal courage under fire. Like when he stood up after being shot with the American flag in the background yelling, fight, 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 like he won over men in that moment. When he enters the UFC arena and the crowd goes wild and he shakes the hands of Joe Rogan and Joe Burrow and Nick Bosa, like he wins over men. Like when Dana White talks about his work ethic and how he operates on a daily basis, this is kind of the equivalent of like a Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan stories. Like that inspires young men especially. But I mean, I would say this, what Trump has become a model of masculinity, and that is his model of masculinity, again, whether you like it or not, is way more attractive than what the progressive left has tried to push down our throats. What they've basically done, and this is feminism influence, is they're basically turning men into women. I would say the prime example of this is Jen Psaki interviewing the potential first husband, I think is what you would have called Doug Emhoff had Kamala Harris won. Doug Emhoff, and basically trying to morph the female role of helpmate and supporter onto men. Like she literally said, like, this is the new vision of masculinity. And the left's idea of what a man is, I mean, just the left's idea of what a man is like a stay-at-home dad pushing a stroller, wearing his baby on his chest, supporting his boss babe wife. And the turning of men into women, and I guess we can say that literally and figuratively right now, this leftist vision is just a man repellent. Like men want nothing to do with it for the most part. And this is why I think men flipped so hard for Trump in the last election, but why men in general are flipping so hard conservative. I mean, it's an outright rejection of what the progressive left ideology has to offer.
Yeah, and it seems like while, you know, some have, you know, varying opinions on who they think Donald Trump is and their opinions of him, it did seem like there are certain moments like the assassination attempt where like you see that happening, and it's like even somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, who isn't exactly looked at as being a conservative, saw that and was like, I respect that. That was an iconic moment. So there's lots at play here, including, like you were talking about, Zach, very strong reactions to what's been happening, which is a perfect segue to what I want to ask you, Lila. As you've been very vocal about, some people do tend to take reaction to evil, sometimes too far. So my question is, are some red pill male influencers potentially doing some harm to the young men who look up to them? And who should young men look up to instead as the standard of masculinity?
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's a great question, Ryan. And of course, I'm sure John and Zach have a lot of thoughts on that too. I do think we can, when we push back against evil, you know, embrace the opposite extreme, which isn't necessarily the good either, right? So that's always something to be cognizant of with all these crazy ideologies swirling around in our culture today. And, you know, I heard what Zach was saying about, you know, there are these this kind of hero stereotype that Trump is filling by, you know, standing up and fighting even after getting hit by a bullet and, you know, standing up to the deep state and all of this. And I understand the attractiveness of that. And we want, you know, true leaders in government who are going to do what's tough, even when there's attacks and even when there are people fighting them. You know, we want them to stand for what's true. But I am concerned about some of the way that we can, again, go the opposite extreme, because I think the real evils of the left today our abortion, are making men and women the same, you know, or that they can switch genders and that there's, you know, a little boy can grow up thinking he's a girl and that makes him a girl. I mean, these are absolute crazy ideas coming from the left. The support of killing babies in the womb obviously is one of those things. The idea of the LGBTQ ideology that marriage is not between a man and a woman, that sex is not designed for marriage, it's designed for really promiscuity and whatever you want. These are the things we're fighting, right? So I get concerned when I see, you know, hero figures like Trump, which, again, I'm grateful for some of the progress he's making for what we believe in, the values we believe in. But, you know, it was under his guidance that the Republican Party put contraception back into the Republican national platform. He took pro-life principles out of the Republican national platform. He took out marriages between a man and a woman out of the Republican platform. And unfortunately, some of the things that he was campaigning on were in support of the things that we know, and a lot of Gen Z is increasingly knowing is not true, which is, you know, LGBTQ agenda, as well as, of course, abortion. So those are all things we got to be real about. It. We can't pretend that those things aren't happening. Those are real things happening. So what we don't want to have happen is, you know, there's some men that are doing amazing work or women that are doing amazing work, but they're supporting at the same time errors, and we're kind of giving them a pass because they're on our team, right? They like, they carry our political label, but they're unfortunately supporting some of the same evils that we are fighting. So we have to kind of look at all this with the nuance that's there. And I think that in the kind of manosphere space that you mentioned, it's certainly a reaction to modern feminism. Modern feminism has just run roughshod over men, and it's horrible. The response, though, can't be for men to try to run roughshod then over women, right? The response has to be the natural order and the what is ultimately our church's beautiful teaching on the sexes being equal in dignity but different, and that we need both men and a woman for marriage and for any healthy society. And so I think approaching it with this really positive view of both women and men, we need each other. Women are good, men are good. They were designed for greatness, and we can work together, you know, in the beautiful natural order that exists. I think that has to be the path forward. Because here's the problem. If we react to modern feminism and the toxicity of modern feminism with like a modern meninism that is also toxic but an opposite toxicity, we're just going to be a downward spiral as a culture and a society. There's no light at the end of that tunnel. So my encouragement would be, let's go back to first principles. Let's uphold the dignity of both men and women, and not say that, you know, women aren't as smart as men, or, you know, men are, you know, not needed and women are better, or whatever nonsense the culture likes to say. And let's embrace the dignity of both and the importance of both in any society.
So it's like, revolutions often don't like nuance, but it seems like what needs to happen is that we need to take the passion that's in these movements and apply them to what you said, Lila, first principles, Catholic principles.
We need truth.
That's right.
Yeah,
amen. Truth.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, sometimes the truth is a little more complex than a slogan, right, or a political statement. And so we need to just embrace the full truth of what God's plan is for men and women and the beautiful design, as opposed to just, you know, an oversimplification and over-radicalization, right, which can lead to the chaos, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes to put truth on a bumper sticker. But we got to do our best, as I know you know this, John.
That's just the word Jesus.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. So, John, I know you know this too. You were talking earlier about the whole manosphere, as some would even say, like MG Tao, men going their own way, all of this stuff online. So what is your take on the red pill movement and its hold on many young men today?
Well, I think that the challenge with the red pill movement, and specifically like figures like Andrew Tate, is that it's partly wrapped up in what's happened with social media. Because I think one of the things that that is, I think, a little misunderstood is the crassness. Like even President Trump, he's a crass guy. You know, I spent a good measure of my life in Jersey. I used to wait tables at Trump Marina in Atlantic City. That crassness, we as guys, we get it. That's a humor that we have between each other. And what's changed in my lifetime, and it's the only thing that Gen Z's ever known, is that stuff that used to be behind closed doors is now said in public. And I think we haven't fully grappled with how that's changing us. But it's also why I think it's hard And I would warn against like being too much of a scold against the guys, the young guys, that are getting something valuable out of a character like Tate. I've made this mistake myself. And what you find is you just end up being another like Karen voice against these guys saying, oh, there's finally someone standing up for you. Now, he's not that good. So I think we have to be careful about that as we try to bring an adult sensibility to our young men. And that's how I see it. I think that what needs to happen is a resurgent sense of what it means to be an adult. And what it means to be an adult is to put aside childish things. And a lot of the sort of rah-rah energy from Tate and the like are the visions of adulthood that a 13-year-old boy has. I'm gonna have women on both arms. I'm gonna drive a Bugatti. Isn't that gonna be great? And reality is, becoming a man means becoming a strong, protective provider. That's a giant part of it. And you know, Lila mentioned that that Gen Z is marrying younger. I am like three cheers for that, because I think this was a path that we've gone down that was wrong, to say that we have to get our life together so that we can get married. It's like, no. Marriage is this integral part of our life that makes us figure out who we are and what we are and matures us. Becoming a dad, becoming responsible for other people, you don't mature before that happens. These are the things of life that mature you. And so I think that simple advice is really powerful. I think the challenge our young guys face, and women both, is that the marketplace for dating, which, you know, God bless, I've gotten out of. I feel like I was on the last chopper out of Nam, has gotten very difficult. And I think we are in the middle of some real technological and social turmoil on that front. And, you know, saying, hey, you know what, instead of going on a swipe app, why don't try to meet your future wife at Mass? That's not a bad piece of advice. And I think that's the kind of stuff that is percolating up, is the recognition that these tools that have seemed like they're empowering have been in many cases social dead ends. And yet it's very hard to, you know, extract yourself from social networks because of the network effects. And so the more we can put these genies back in a bottle, I think the more we can kind of have a healthier masculinity. And I think that's all wrapped up together. And so there's no easy answer there, but I think modeling being an adult is the best answer I've got.
John, that was amazing. That was a perfect way to end this conversation today. Although I really wish that we could continue, because there are so many more questions that I wanted to ask all of you. But thankfully, our audience can find all of you on your very successful social media platforms on YouTube, Instagram, and elsewhere. Lila, Zach, and John, thank you so much for joining us today for this conversation. And thank you for joining us. And don't forget to join us next week right here on The Catholic Sphere.